Fasten your time machine belts. We're entering a portal to the past to discover erstwhile episodes and historical happenings. Broadcast by KYMN Radio, produced by the Northfield History Center, and hosted by Cosmo Esplin, this is Trek Through Time. Welcome, KYMN listeners, to a brand new episode of Trek Through Time. I'm your host, Cosmo Esplin. Thank you for joining me here right on 95.1, the one Northfield's community radio station. As you may have noticed if you're listening live, or who knows, maybe you just have a really great sense of intuition if you're listening on Spotify, but this is airing at a different time. That's right, we've hit prime time, baby. I'm glad that you are tuning back in here today for June's episode. I'm excited. We have some really great guests joining us in the studio and a fun topic that it does deal with sports, but honestly, you don't need to be a sports fan to find this interesting because I'm not a huge sporty athletic type myself. That may be shocking to some of you, but I think that this is going to be a really fun show today, so stay tuned for that. But first, we've got to hit up what's going on over at the Northfield History Center, my producers. It's time for the NHC Minute. All right, so the main thing coming up this month for the Northfield History Center in downtown Northfield is their 50th birthday party, which is happening at Loon Liquor. So this is a super exciting event. They've been planning it for a little while. They have an event committee dedicated to making it happen and putting all the pieces together. Starting at 5 p.m. on Monday, June 22nd, the History Center is kicking off this event that also doubles as a fundraiser. So there's going to be local items up for auction that you can bid on, and all of those funds are going to go to the History Center's Save the Scriver campaign, which is dedicated to preserving and restoring the Scriver Building in downtown Northfield to its 1876 facade while creating new top-tier apartments on the inside. It's a really great thing that they have going on, especially as we celebrate 50 years of the organization's history. That's pretty wild. And 150 years of bank raid history. It's going to be a blast. I can't wait to see you there. So drop on by, have a pizza, and donations would be greatly appreciated. That's pretty much all I have for you, other than to look out for some book club events happening on second Mondays of the month and History Happy Hours, always on the first Monday of the month. Thanks to the History Center for continuing to engage the Northfield community in their mission and stewarding history for the next generation. We appreciate you folks. However, I think it's about time that we get to the topic for today's show. So, what history subject are we going to be digging into on this month's Trek Through Time? Cue up the drum roll. June's Axis of Antiquity is none other than the history of Northfield and Dundas baseball. So I first had the idea for this a little while ago, about a year and a half ago. I was in L&M Bar and Grill in downtown Dundas, and I saw a Dundas Dukes jersey on the wall there, and I figured, you know what? Dundas Dukes would be an interesting topic to dig into. I put it on hold for a little while, and I figured, why not pull it out for this month on Trek Through Time? But we're also going to be digging into the Dukes' long-lived rivals, the Northfield Knights, because both of these teams, really, their history intertwines. So anyway, the Dukes and the Knights started playing again last month, which means that local baseball has returned, and with it, a culture of sports fandom, history, and intertown rivalry that celebrates America's pastime on a regional scale. The Dukes and the Knights are both beloved institutions that demonstrate the community spirit of amateur baseball. After all, it's all for the love of the game. The Knights won this year's Memorial Day game 7-4, so we'll see if they'll be able to go 2-0 against the Dukes this year, or if Dundas will even it up on July 4th. So a lot of people are familiar with the Dukes and the Knights in town, but what's the origin and the background of how these impressive franchises first sprouted? So according to my friend and local historian Jeff Sove, Northfield baseball can be tracked all the way back to 1867, a mere 12 years after the town's founding. That first team was known as the Adriatics, and a pattern of briefly established and diversely named teams ensued thereafter. The Red Hats, the Millers, and the Cardinals. I'm sensing a red theme. These teams eventually morphed into what we now know as the Dukes, which through various previous incarnations have 158 years of total history. In her Historic Happenings column on 19th century Minnesota baseball, another fellow friend of mine and local historian Susan Vistendahl recounts a comedically ironic scene from the rather inaccurate 1972 film The Great Northfield Minnesota Raid, which starred Robert Duvall and Cliff Robertson. In this scene, Cole Younger attends a baseball game between Northfield and St. Paul, featuring a mountain range in the background. What a uniquely erroneous addition. The scene concludes with Cole shooting a flying ball with his rifle. If that doesn't scream blending into the crowd, I don't know what does. Anyway, there's no record, though, of a game being played between St. Paul and Northfield on that day, which is not surprising that Hollywood didn't search into that a little bit more. Anyway, baseball has always been an element of campus sports in town, too. Both St. Olaf and Carleton played their first formally organized game in 1887. However, some archives list Olies and Carls separately playing the sport as early as 1880. Like with any other sport, these intercollegiate rivalries continue across the river to this day. In fact, Carleton hosted an all-PhD baseball team in the 1920s that consisted entirely of professors, showing that teachers can still be hip and cool, as much as those ideals existed 100 years ago, anyway. The Northfield High School also launched a baseball program in the early 1900s, with a team photograph dated back to 1902. The Raiders continued their quest for success to this day, going 16-6 this year, earning a top seed, and now advancing to a section championship. Don't forget to root for them as well. Also, the Northfield Silver Stars vintage team pop up from time to time, dressed in 1800s wear and playing games on special occasions, so it's possible that we'll see them again during this year's sesquicentennial. Today's show, however, will examine the genesis and legacy of the two remaining adult amateur teams that continue drawing in attendees, the Dundas Dukes and the Northfield Knights. But in order to dig into this adequately, I need some guests to help me out. So not one, not two, but three baseball fans are in the studio today to help me discover the history of these local teams. We have Ira Carlson, Mike Allen, and Kevin Sevchuk. So Ira Carlson is the public address announcer for the Dundas Dukes and a member of their board. Mike Allen played for both the Dukes and the Knights, although he spent the majority of his baseball career with the Knights and is known for kind of helping them get going again starting in the 80s. And then Kevin Sevchuk is representing both teams because he, like Mike, played for both the Dukes and the Knights, but he's very split. He's 50-50, so we get the best of both worlds. I'm looking forward to talking to Ira, Mike, and Kevin about some baseball memories and how that feeds into local lore about the Dukes, the Knights, and the iconic rivalry. As of right now, the Knights are currently 4-0, while the Dukes sit at 3-2, although there's going to be more games played before this show airs. So it'll be interesting to see how things pan out by the time this gets broadcast. So we have a fun interview ahead of us. And I suppose I should remind you that right now you're listening to 95.1 FM, 1080 AM, KYMN, The One. It's time to head back in time with Ira Carlson, Mike Allen, and Kevin Sevchuk to discover the history of Northfield and Dundas baseball. All right, welcome into the studio, Mike and Kevin. Thank you both for being here today. I'm excited to talk local baseball. We got another guest coming in just a few minutes, but I just want to start by getting some background on you folks. Mike, what is your past affiliation with the Northfield Knights, and how'd you get into local baseball?
My local baseball started when I moved up here in 1969, and I think my first experiences were out at the old Memorial Field, which is no longer there. It's over by where the swimming pool area is. But yeah, we used to play VFW games back in the day at that Memorial Park, and then the Knights were playing back then. This is what it would have been, 69 through the early 70s.
Okay.
And then it was in the early 70s that they just didn't have the interest in players and stuff, where the Knights just kind of took a break. So I do remember I was here when they took that break. When I was in college, when I finished high school, I was looking for a team to play. Knights weren't around at that time. I think Dundas was pretty full. I didn't know anybody in Dundas either, and there was no, I don't remember any communications with them. But I went down to Faribault. I played for the Faribault Lakers down at Bell Field. And so that was very helpful in my college years. You know, college kids, I mean, that's where I think of the Knights when we brought it back, is that's the outlet for college kids to come back for the summer and get 25, 30 games experience in. You know, the more at-bats you get in baseball is very relatable to your success. I mean, that's really what baseball is all about. It's not one of those things that you need at-bats in. College kids need to come back and play amateur baseball in the summer. And we're very fortunate in Minnesota. I mean, I don't know how familiar you are with the other parts of the country, but Minnesota is just absolutely a hotbed and really, I think, one of the most iconic, you know, amateur leagues in the country. And I've been to Virginia. I was in the Navy. I was in Virginia. I saw what they had out in the Tidewater area. And I spent some time in California, and I've seen what they do out there. There's no comparison. Minnesota is really well above what most of the other states are in this country. Mm-hmm. So I
do know from my research that the landscape of local baseball institutions in Minnesota is pretty impressive overall.
Yeah, it really is.
It's a town ball capital.
Yeah, I mean, you can find some in Iowa. Wisconsin's pretty good. Very similar to Minnesota, Wisconsin is.
It is interesting how different sports really kind of get concentrated in certain areas of the country. I mean, obviously, we're also a big hockey state, but it seems like you also mentioned Wisconsin and Iowa. So baseball seems to have this kind of stronghold on the Midwest. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. And it might have to do with, you know, the way the place was set up at agricultural communities, you know, farm families. I don't know what it has to do with ethnicities. It might be, you know, the Irish communities, might be German communities that just like playing that ball. And, and it was kind of like, this was something to do on a Sunday. You still go to these places. You go to Vesely. What do you see? You see a bar, you see a Catholic church, and you see a baseball field. You know, and that's it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of places like that throughout the state that's the thing you do on a Sunday.
That's why it's America's pastime, right?
Yeah.
Kevin, so it's fun to have you in here because you played for both the Dukes and the Knights. Our other guest joining us in a minute is an announcer for the Dukes. So we have the best of both worlds, for sure. We have one Duke, one Knight, and one both. So what was your experience with both teams like?
The experience was great with both teams. Like Mike Stick, we call him Stick here. Big Stick, because he was a really good hitter in high school. He got the winning hit to get us to the state tournament in high school in 1970.
After going 0-3 previously, so I got to add that. So it wasn't a great day overall, but it ended up being great.
But you got the hit when we needed.
It was topped off by that. Yeah.
But we just like Mike, I played with the Faribault Lakers. I played there from 1975 to 78, and then in 1979, and that was, we had really good teams in Faribault, but we just never could get over the hump to get to the state tournament. But in 1979, the Dundas Dukes approached me. In 75, they had been state runner-up, and because we also made, at the Faribault Lakers, we also made the state tournament in 75. We won our first game, but then that was it. We lost our second, but Dundas made it to the finals. And Dundas was just starting to really come into their own. They were starting in the mid-70s, and I thought, well, I felt pretty honored that they invited me. So I played there, started playing there in 1979, which was right after my senior year in college, and I played there till 87. By the way, the Knights, I believe, I think the last year the Knights played before getting reorganized in 88, I believe was 1974. Gone about 14 years there, and then in 88, you know, I heard they were going to get started, and Mike and like Steve Remish and like Kurt Callister, I think you three were kind of working on me to come play. And it was difficult to leave the Dukes because it was a real close-knit team and very successful team. But, you know, I decided, hey, I'm from Northfield. I thought, well, I should really help help get the team started again. So I made the jump, and the Dukes were just loaded that year in 1988. They won their second state championship without me. They really missed me big time. So they were just loaded that year. They walked away with the championship that year. So I think
it just shows that you knew if you stayed on board, you would have been a winner again. But I think, you know, Kevin really looked at the fact just playing some high school buddies.
Yeah.
And that's what it was all about. It was kind of helping out, getting us going again. So I think he was pretty unselfish, you know. But so what, you missed one state championship, big deal.
Yeah.
That's not the end of the world.
That's not what it's
about. You know, we've always kind of been on two different paths as far as really, I think if there was a rivalry, I don't remember what it was like in the early days, but as far as when we started up again in 88, we probably should have been a Class C team just because of the fact that we're just brand new. And the Dukes were at that time, where they're pretty established, and they were a legit Class B, which is an upper crust type league. But like, we hosted the state tournament. Yeah, we're rivalries, but I think we're kind of like almost two separate programs were.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, we had a real solid team those 4 years I played with the Knights. And but I do remember going, well, we're going to be Class C, right? Since we're just starting out, and found out we were B, and I go, oh shoot, I think we could have made the state tournament right out of the chute as a C team.
Yeah.
You know, and then build up to B. But,
well, and the NBA does whatever they want. They might not have allowed it anyway.
They
boost you up to Class B whether you like it or not. In the 70s, we basically rode Kevin's back to getting into the state tournament back when there was one class in Minnesota high school ball. So we were one of the top eight teams in the entire state.
Wow.
And like I say, we basically rode his back then. He was our pitcher. We had a lot of teammates that like playing ball.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of nice to get everybody back to a lot of those guys get back together again. So,
So Kevin, I have to ask the inevitable question, do you root for one team over the other during Memorial Day?
Good question. Good question.
Do you have your bets on both?
Come on.
Just like I am dressed today, I have my 1982 state championship jersey on. I can fit into it now because at one time I was about 50 pounds heavier than I am now. And I also have a Northfield Knights jersey over that. Yeah. And I also have my Dukes and Knights hats. So
to tell you the truth,
when I go to those games on the 4th of July and Memorial Day, I'm kind of quiet because I'm pulling for both teams. Okay. And I don't want to upset anybody, but in fact, since I had played for both teams.
Well, it's fun that way because then you get to root for everybody. You're always happy, never in the dumps or anything. So, and we are now joined by our other Dukes representative today, Ira Carlson, a public service announcer. So, Ira, you just want to give me a little bit of background on how you got involved with the Dukes and local baseball?
Sure. So we'll call it getting started in about 19, I want to say 77. We moved to Dundas. So as a kid, I moved to Dundas. Grew up about three blocks away, kind of right across from where Chapel Brewing is now.
Oh, sure.
And I'd hear the crack of the bat on a Saturday, and I'd quit mowing the lawn and hopefully not get in trouble for that and head down there. And I'd shag the fall balls and home runs. Back then, they were 10 cents a fall ball and a quarter for a home run.
Score,
but back in those days, you could get some quarters out there with, Buddha and a few of the others, the big guys hitting the big bats. So I fell in love with Dukes baseball real early as a kid. And then later in 1999, we built a house right near the ballpark, almost kitty corner of the ballpark. And my kids were young. I went down to a couple games, and I'm like, "Yeah, maybe I'll get involved in here." I'd been on, got on the Dukes or the Dundas Park Board at the time, and got involved with the Dukes. And then I had my daughter down there, and kept having to go over to the ballpark, or to the playground and everything else. And somebody said, "Hey, we need an announcer for the next game." I'm like, "Well, I'll try that. Do that, find out that I get free beer, free hot dogs, get to watch baseball from basically the best spot."
Right.
And I kind of fell in love with it. And then because I'm in IT, I kind of helped also bring forward, the atmosphere and stuff. So when I got there, we literally had a cassette tape player, you know, an old boombox sitting there, and you just literally held the mic up to it and played music in between innings. And then you'd pause between songs. And,
the old-fashioned one.
Yeah, and we had a single of, you know, of Duke of Earl by Gene Chandler. We would play that for home runs and for wins, and so you had to quick play it, rewind it, be ready, because, you know, with we were still metal bats at that point, because I think we went wood bat back to wood bats in 2002, because state tournament was 2003. In the meantime, I brought a laptop down. We figured out how to hook in the music because we're getting ready for the state tournament. Buddy and I redid the whole sound system. And because of that, I've not left that PA box since. And this is my year 27 of doing that. So,
wow.
So it's been a long time. But and yeah, I kind of.
You do a great job, Ira. I just like all those songs you play during the games. And then, like, Happy Trails again, right after at the end of the game. It's kind of fun to hum that song as you're walking to your car or whatever, or, you know, and after the games and everything. So, anyway, it's a lot of fun.
What's your go to tune to break out every now and again?
Well, obviously Duke of Earl, but, you know, we play that home runs and wins and stuff. There's certain songs that I kind of get hooked on, you know, so like there's a really weird kind of reggae dubstep, Queen Omega, that I kind of really like right now, which catches people off guard. So I used to play very much all the traditional standard baseball fare, center field, you know, that kind of stuff. But then I've kind of adapted a little bit to the point of I get tired of hearing that. So I try to go with just kind of it really kind of depends on the mood. So it's definitely a very unique collection. I've been using the same program since 2002, 2003. So I think the last time I looked, I probably got about 6,000 songs or music on my collection from the beginning. So I have a little bit of everything along the way. I don't add a whole lot every year, but, you know, kind of like as I find something new, I kind of throw it in there.
Mix it up a little bit. Yep. You know? Yeah, that's nice to have. You can definitely dip back into that playlist.
Oh, yeah.
Again, 6,000 songs. That makes it easier. So, Mike, I want to kind of dig into a little bit of the Knights' origin, and then we can touch on the Duke's founding as well. But so you mentioned that you were kind of part of bringing it back. When did it first originate, and what's kind of been the mini journey since then?
You know what? I can't go back that far because, like I said, I moved up here in 69 and they were going.
They were playing already.
Yeah. So I do know that, you know, a few of the old timers that were part of that group, like Kevin mentioned, some of those guys, but yeah, they had a board and I know a couple guys that worked out at Shell at all. And I really can't tell you what was the original, what got the Knights going.
You know, I spent about an hour yesterday Googling Northfield Knights history.
So
and
did
I could it actually, and then I said, when did the Northfield Knights originally get started? It said 2002. Well, that's, I don't know why it said two. I mean, because it was 88 when it got reorganized. So I don't know, maybe legally something happened in 2002. But back in those, in the 70s, early 70s, 60s, when Ron Severson, Bernie Auger, Hale Gargrave, those kind of guys were playing, they did go to a few, or at least a couple of state tournaments. They had some really good teams. I remember speaking to Bernie Auger out at a Duke's game one time about that, and he was reminiscing about how they had some really good teams. And I don't know how far they went in the tournaments, but they got there.
You may have to go back through the old Northfield News and just kind of see if you can glimpse, you know, get a column on he started this program. That would be my suggestion.
Yeah, I also tried doing some digging on the actual origin, and no matter how far I dug online, I couldn't find anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we might need to recruit someone to just, flip through a bunch of old newspapers. Well, I do want to touch on the Duke's origin as well, Ira, and how they've kind of evolved over the years. Bill Nelson was obviously a big part of that. So how did they kind of sprout up, and what's been the momentum that's driven them since then?
Dukes themselves are probably more about, starting as being very organized, were around the 50s and 60s and stuff. But there's references to Dundas playing other towns back into, the late 1800s. So if you go back through there, you'll see that Dundas took on, Millersburg or something like that, and a lot of that was happening in fields and stuff. But organized baseball I want to say it was Brown in the 40s and 50s, but then, you know, they started out as the Reds, if I remember right. Then they became the Cardinals, and they were the Cardinals when Bill joined the team. You know, so Donnie Freeman and the rest were then that. But then Hampton joined the league and was the Cardinals, and they didn't want to have two Cardinals teams together.
Oh,
so
sure.
One night after a game, I guess, you know, several beers were drank sitting around a fire. Many discussions were had, and that's where the name the Dukes emerged from. So, again, the you know, the Dundas had some form of a team, generally just kind of a Class C town ball team, but Bill Nelson basically turned that from being – kind of that to going out and actually really getting some good players. I mean, Bill was amazing at networking. He was able to, you know, do things like bring in Scotty Nelson, who he was teaching with over in Kenyon, because he was Carlton baseball coach in the late 90s when I dealt with him. He also ended up designing the original press box.
Yes.
So, you know, the grandstand that, you know, I guess you wouldn't call it a grandstand. The grandstand I remember as a kid was 2x6s on cinder blocks built up into a stadium steps when you parked your bike underneath it, you know. So the evolution of that ballpark, you know, not only the team, but the ballpark was definitely, you know, Bill's thing too. Because, I mean, Bill basically turned it from just kind of a general little generic local team, you know, to being something amazing.
Well, it's known as like a top tier venue in Minnesota now. It's, they've gone gone under a lot of renovations and everything.
It's
as well.
Definitely in the top 10 of all the wonderful amateur fields and stadiums in Minnesota.
I learned that real early on as I got involved. Bill's dislike, we'll say, of Meesville was ran very deep, and it was always very interesting. Those rivalries between the you know, the Meesville, I mean, the rivalry, Dundas's probably biggest rival is still Meesville. And unfortunately, Meesville had been kind of winning that a little more the last couple of years. They've been able to hold their team together, but that rivalry runs really, really quite deep. And some of that came from that. But
they're probably more similar organizations based upon Meesville's had a strong board. They've had strong, you know, local support, small community like that. Whereas Northfield, like I said, it's a different. It's a different set of organizations.
Yeah.
You know, the distance is a rivalry in itself. But yeah, I agree that Meesville, Dundas, that's pretty serious rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have to ask if any Dukes or Knights have gone on to play professionally.
Oh, yes. Really? And also come the other way. You know, so Dana Kicker, originally from Fairfax.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So he started out in Fairfax, but then he ended up going on to pitch for the Boston Red Sox, including in the American Classic. I forget how high he made it, not the World Series itself, but he's, you know, major league pitcher. So he was instrumental in the 98-99 state tournament teams and stuff. And so I had a chance to announce him a little bit because he continued to pitch. He did pitch in 2003 for the state tournament there a little bit longer. How high did Guy Centrum make it?
Maybe.
I want to say at least double A.
Double A, I think. Maybe.
Yeah. And then, oh, Jim Fuchs.
Jim Fuchs.
Yeah, I was going to say Twins.
Yeah.
Twins minor league. More recently, the current manager and the guy who basically took over, managing the ball field itself, Mike Ludwig. So he played A ball for the Dodgers.
Okay. All right.
Then St. Paul Saints have stolen guys for a few years. So, I should say we got Charlie Rudd, after he'd pitched for the Saints. So he's originally from Cannon Falls, but he went to St. Olaf. He and Todd Matheson own, I think, most of St. Olaf's pitching records.
Okay.
And then speaking of Todd Matheson, he went and pitched for the Saints for a while. And then even on the night side,
Sam Moss with the Saints.
Yeah, because Saints generally took pitchers because they always need pitching depth. So a lot of the, you know, Hastings lost a couple guys to the Saints for a while. You know, so they'd go there for a little bit and come back. But Sam Moss is really the main position player to have gone to play for the Saints.
Yeah.
And this guy here, he was drafted by the Twins.
And what keep year? In mind, listeners, that he's pointing to Kevin.
What year was that you drafted?
It was 78. It was after my junior year at St. Olaf. So it was a dream of mine to be drafted, and Twins called me up I don't know, a week before the draft in 80 and in 78 and asked if they were to draft me, would I sign? And I almost said, well, how much would I have to pay you to do that? But I know. But so I said, yes, I would. Mm-hmm. And so they did. And I signed. And I went to a rookie ball down in Elizabethan, Tennessee, played with a guy named Jesse Orozco, who had the record for most pitching appearances in Major League Baseball. I think one other person has now gotten a little bit ahead of him for the number of pitching appearances. And then there was Lenny Fiedo, a shortstop that made it to the majors with the Twins. My career was short. It just didn't work out. Stick with what got you there. The reason I was drafted was mainly because I had a slider that could really break nice, and I could throw for those days I could throw fairly fast, about 90 miles an hour. So I don't know, one thing led, it was kind of the perfect storm. It just didn't work out, but a couple teams invited me to spring training in the next year, more just kind of to try out if I wanted to, Toronto and St. Louis, and I didn't do it.
That's pretty cool though, to say that you're actually drafted by the Twins. Well, not many people can say that. Well, I think we've covered a lot of bases, no pun intended. I'm sorry, I was right there. I had to do it. But there are obviously a lot of other historical highlights from Dukes and Knights history. The Dukes have won 5 state championships, and they've finished as runner-ups 8 other times. The Knights, in 2023, somewhat recently, they defeated the defending champs Rochester Royals during the baseball tournament run of that year. So there's a lot of highlights. Are there any other major events that I left out or that we want to touch on today?
Well, I was reading through some old articles online yesterday, and this article in the Northfield News was like 2009, doing a preview of the Dukes and Knights game. And at that time, I think Dundas' record against Northfield was like 30-5 in regular season games. Oof. Now, okay. In recent years, it's getting more of a level playing
more
field.
Equal.
But
yeah.
So... but still, Dundas still has, in general, has the upper hand in winning percentage, even in recent years too. But the Knights are a solid team too, and so
they're 4-0 right now, I believe.
I think
right?
So. Yes, yeah. I saw that yesterday too. Yeah, but it's nice to have two really good teams to go follow and support here, right in Northfield and Dundas. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that is definitely a big bonus for people in town, baseball fans especially. So we have to wrap it up here in about 5 to 10 minutes, but the last thing I always do with my guests is something that sounds scary, but it's not that bad. It's called a rapid-fire round. So I just I pitch you some super quick questions, and you try to hit them as best as you can with rather pithy replies. So if you're ready, let's start with the first one, which is who's your favorite Twins player of all time?
Carmen Kilbrew.
Earl Betty.
Probably Rod Crew.
All right. We're moving already. Favorite ball game snack?
Hot dog.
All right. Can't go wrong with that.
Peanuts.
Wait, it's got to be mustard. Got to be
mustard. And ketchup or just mustard?
No, just mustard.
Just mustard.
Oh, ketchup.
Hot take.
Peanuts. In fact, I was very bummed just on the last game. They were out of peanuts, and I didn't realize it, and I didn't bring any, so it felt really weird to be announcing the game and not having my peanuts there right there. So I eat shelled peanuts every game. So
no Cracker Jacks? Any Cracker Jack lovers here? No?
And the peanuts are a bad thing because as a PA announcer, if you are eating them incorrectly and all of a sudden you're choking while trying to announce things, it's probably not the most appropriate thing to eat, but I still love them.
But real quick, Stick and I, Mike Allen and I, just went down to watch the high school baseball team a few days ago, and they won the game. Now they're going to be in the section finals.
Yeah, they're on a little run of their own.
What, Wednesday? But Stick brought a couple bags of peanuts, and we enjoyed those.
I had the opportunity to get invited to Champions Club Twins here about a month ago.
Yeah.
Friend of ours has tickets. So I think we walked out with 11 bags of peanuts from Champions Club. So.
Just cash it out, right?
As yeah. Much if you're going to spend that kind of money, it's nice to come out
with. Right. Yeah. Make it worth it, right? Favorite baseball movie?
The Rookie.
All right.
Yeah, I like the Robert Redford, the natural one. That was pretty good.
I might go with The Rookie right now. All of a sudden, you asked me that, and all of my hockey movies pop into my head. So.
It's all good. There's a lot of those, too. I haven't seen a ton of baseball movies, but I love the movie Moneyball. I think
that's very good too.
That's such a sharp movie. All right, last one here. Is there a favorite or most memorable game, either from the Knights or the Dukes, that you've had the privilege of playing in or watching?
I suppose the 82 state championship game. I didn't play in that game. I pitched the semifinal game, which ended about 1 in the morning the night before because there were some brain delays. But watching the 82 state championship, Bill Nelson pitched most of the game, and then I think Lou Olson pitched last couple innings. In 82, Lou Olson was the MVP. Anyway, so that's probably my favorite memory.
Yeah, I enjoyed looking back, going against Dana Kecker. I mean, knowing that he was a major leaguer and I was unsuccessful against him, but still I thought it was pretty cool. The fact that Arla Dundas get to play, you know, he's pitching and that's to me, that's going to be a highlight.
For me, 2017 state tournament win in Cold Spring, because at that time Minnesota baseball didn't have any kind of broadcasting or whatever else, and Kim Radio was a Twins affiliate, or still is, but yeah. So they weren't covering us or whatever. So I actually had set up online streaming, so I actually was broadcasting the game myself from Cold Spring. So getting to announce the game, you know, watching it live, and then actually Kim Radio picked up the feed from me, Jeff Johnson, the former owner.
Yeah.
So I was actually announcing it over Kim Radio at the time.
Oh, funny.
And so, but that one was my favorite because I came in and I joined Dundas Baseball in 99, didn't start announcing until 2000, and they just won two state tournaments, and they had not won again, and we were runner-up in 2003. And had been close many times, but after being so involved as the public address announcer, knowing the guys for as long, 2017 was probably very special for me just to actually be there as a part of it, you know, not only as a fan, but also getting a chance to announce it and bring it to others. So that's definitely my favorite.
And welcome back to the KYMN airwaves.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had a little podcast on here a couple years ago, too. So, yeah.
Oh, fine. What was that about?
The beer show. So it was me and Corey Butler. I've had many going back and forth with Jeff over the years. So.
Yeah.
And now obviously Rich.
A lot of connections in town for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Could I interject one other story?
Go right ahead.
About Stick here. Stick went down and played in the Twins fantasy camp one year. A player for the Twins, Mudcat Grant, was watching Mike take batting practice. And after he was hitting the ball all over the park, he said, "Well, what organization did you play? Have you played for in base? You know, pro organizations?" And Mike said, "I haven't played for any." He couldn't believe that Mike had not been picked up by any professional team ever. So Stick was a real good hitter.
I think our northern climate baseball compared to the southern, you know, there's quite a difference. And I think the opportunities are such that, you know, even Kevin going down and having a shot. I mean, the ones that make it through, I mean, you just look at St. Paul, mm-hmm. The Hall of Famers out of St. Paul. I mean, there's good ball players up here, but they don't think of us as being, you know, the ball players that they are in the South because they play so many more games. They play all, you know, and it isn't just playing, but it's getting at bats and all that kind of stuff. And I truly believe that my hitting ability each year, just when you accumulate so many more at bats, it's like, you got to get better. I mean, and it's the fact that they probably have an edge or a jump because they have so many more at bats. But, you know, our people around here, they're pretty solid ball. There's good solid athletes. I mean, that 88 Duke team, by far, it's got to be the best team I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had all-stars sitting on the bench that year.
Wow.
I mean, it was that packed. So the good athletes all around. Just
there's a lot of guys who make it to the majors who were pitchers in, you know, in Minnesota high schools, just a lot of pitchers. And, yeah. and the nice thing there is you can be up north and I mean, you can, as long, you know, you can still get enough innings to develop far enough to be a pitcher.
The kid for the Mets now, Zach Thornton.
Yeah.
He played little league ball here until they moved to Lawrence, Kansas.
Mark Thornton's nephew, I believe.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
Paul's wild son. Story.
He played out of Sackler Park for years and years and years, and then they moved because his dad got a job at Kansas. They moved to Lawrence, Then he got into the Barton Community College with the more Southern ball players. He went to Grand Canyon and Phoenix, and those things, just those opportunities came up for him. And he got called up, you know, I think, you know, from Syracuse.
Well, and the kid from Randolph.
Yep. Caleb Thielbar.
Caleb Thielbar.
He was playing for the Railcats, and the Railcats couldn't win a game every year because they were just, forget what the current distance is from home plate, but you can only draft players within a certain range, or also if they, you know, their address has to be there. And Randolph just, you know, they're sitting right in the middle of, you got Meesville taking guys, Hastings taking guys, Northfield, Dundas. So they were always struggling. So Railcats barely made it, but Caleb was there. I remember still announcing him in high school, and now look where, what he's gone on to do.
And Mike and I played 35 and over baseball for many years. We had a teammate named Kelvin Thielbar, Caleb's father. When Kelvin was, you know, playing for our 35 and over team, his son Caleb would come and just watch the games, and he, bat boy. And sometimes we only had nine players. So I remember Caleb warmed me up a couple times. And I never imagined he was going to be a future Major League Baseball player. So he's with the Cubs right now. Unfortunately, the Twins gave up on him a couple years ago. So he's proved him wrong here the last 2 years with the Cubs. So.
Well, a fun fact about the Thielbars is actually the field where Dundas sits on, that Memorial Park, was actually the Thielbars farm, the family, and they donated the land to Dundas. And that's what, because at one point there was some discussion about, you know, because it's Memorial Park, and some people wanted to, like, a family or a close family wanted to see if we'd change it to Thielbar, but we couldn't because it's a Memorial Park, you don't change that. So that's why when we had a chance to name the field, it's Bill Nelson Field at Memorial Park itself. So
That's a nice way to honor him.
Yeah.
Excellent. Great. Well, there's a lot of fun facts and deep dives in the world of local baseball, especially here in Northfield and Dundas, of course. So thank you all for coming on today and talking through Knights and Dukes history. It's been fun, and I look forward to taking in a game, hopefully maybe this 4th of July also.
Yeah, great.
There you go.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That conversation felt like one from the good old days, didn't it? It was fun listening to Ira, Mike, and Kevin all kind of reminisce about some fun games and iconic memories from Dukes and Knights history, and for providing some historical tidbits in the process. So thank you all three of you for coming into the studio today. I'm glad that we could make it happen, and best of luck to not just the Dukes or the Knights, but to both teams the rest of the season. Also, thank you to my producers at the Northfield History Center, Sean Allen and Mark Thornton, as well as Rich Larson at KYMN Radio, and some helpful historical resources, Susan Vistendahl, Jeff Sove, and Dan Swanson. And, of course, thank you to my parents. And to you, the listeners, please remember to keep an eye out for the next episode of Trek Through Time. Also, keep an eye out for the Northfield History Center's June 22nd Loon Liquor birthday party. It's going to be a blast. I will be there, and a lot of other board members and community supporters of the Save the Scriver campaign. If you can't wait and you want to make a donation now, it would be much appreciated, and you can feel free to go to northfieldhistory.org and look through some of the details that they have on their website there, including how to donate. But until then, thank you, listeners, for tuning into this episode. I think that it proved that even though there's still some intertown rivalries, Dundas and Northfield can still come together, play together, and watch together, all for the love of the game. Sports can be divisive, but they can also be very uniting, and I think that we see that in the history of the Dukes and the Knights. We'll have to see who comes out on top this 4th of July. Until then, this has been Voyage 31 of Trek Through Time. I'm your host, Cosmo Esplin, reminding you to make history happen.